Chapter 11. It was that stage of life at which, had Guido been a normal boy, his voice would have changed, dropping down from the boy's soprano to a tenor or basso. And this is always a dangerous time for eunuchs. No one knows why, but it seems the body is trying to work the magic for which it no longer has the power. And the voice is threatened by that vain effort, so that many singing teachers do not allow their castrati to sing during these months. The voice, it is hoped, will all the sooner recover. And in general, it does. But sometimes it is lost. And in the case of Guido, this tragedy happened. Half a year passed before anyone could be certain, and these were months of inexpressible agony for Guido. Again and again, he could offer only hoarse and lame sounds. His maestros were grief-stricken. Gino and Alfredo could not look him in the eye. Even those who had envied him were dumb with horror. But of course, no one felt this loss as Guido did, not even Maestro Cavalla, who had trained him. And one afternoon, gathering all the money he had from fetes and suppers where he'd sung, gold he hadn't had time to waste, Guido disappeared with the clothes on his back without a word to anyone. No one guided him. He had no map. He asked a question now and then, as for 10 days he walked the steep and dusty roads that led him deeper and deeper into Calabria. Finally, he came to the village of Caracena, and from there he went out at dawn, his coat matted with straw from the inn where he'd slept, and, climbing the slope, found a house in which he'd been born on his father's land exactly as he'd left it 12 years ago. A woman stood by the fire, squat, heavy, the lines of her mouth sunken in her rounded face for want of teeth, her eyes milky, her skin gleamed with the cooking fat. And for a moment he was uncertain, then he knew her perfectly. "Guido," she whispered. Yet she was afraid to touch him, and bowing low, she wiped the place for him to sit. His brothers came in, hours passed, dirty children huddled together in the corner, and finally his father appeared, standing over him, the same hulk, to offer a crude cup of wine with both hands, and his mother placed a great supper before him. All stared at his fancy coat, his leather boots, the sword he wore at his side with its silver scabbard. And he sat staring at the fire, as if he were not surrounded by them. But now and then his eyes would move, as if turned by a handle. And he would look at this dark assemblage of burly men, their hands black with hair and dirt, their clothes of sheepskin and rawhide. "What am I doing here? Why did I come?" He rose to leave them. "Guido," his mother said again. Wiping her hands quickly, she came forward as if to touch his face. It was only the second time that anyone here had addressed him. And something struck him in her voice. It was the same tone of the young maestro in the darkened practice room, echoing back to the man who had held his head at the castration. He stared at her, and his hands commenced to move, searching all of his pockets. Out came the gifts he'd received for so many little concerts, a brooch, a gold watch, snuff boxes inlaid with pearl, and at last, gold coins, which he gave up to all of them. Their hands felt so dry, exactly like dried dirt on a rock. His mother was crying. He was back in the inn at Caracena by nightfall. As soon as he reached the bustling center of Naples, Guido sold his pistol for enough to rent a room over a tavern, and, ordering a bottle of wine, he cut his veins with a knife and sat drinking the wine as the blood flowed until he lost consciousness. But he was found before he died. He was taken back to the conservatorio, and there, his wrists bound up, he awoke in his own bed with Maestro Cavalla, his teacher, weeping over him.